Welcome to the podcast we call Soul Chaser, featuring stories from the book by the same name, Soul Chaser. This is Jordan Rich, and by my side is author Lauren Decker. We want to spend time with you today at soul level, awakening our spirits to the simple and beautiful idea that God is love and love is everywhere.
I saw this once before, a picture in my mind, colors in the air. Sunlight on a field, lovers in a dance, love is everywhere. Love is everywhere.
And now, today's installment of Soul Chaser.
Hello, everyone. It's Jim Deering again, with you to read another of Lauren Paul Decker's wonderful stories. Today's stories is considerably longer than usual and is a biblical story about ancient Israel's high priest of Shiloh and a man who would become a prophet of that nation. He would be venerated as a prophet by Jews, Muslims, and Christians. The story is called Eli. A low rumble of thunder rolled over the temple courtyard. Eli checked the starlit sky, but there was no sign of rain. The thunder continued to echo off the mountains to the north. Old Eli the priest was out of his bed and listening in the night. He walked out beyond the temple grounds to the latrine that the men used, and there he relieved himself. "Oh, there you are," the young boy Samuel said as he approached the old priest. "You called me?" No, boy, I did not summon you. Go back to your room." Seconds later, the rolling thunder cascaded out of the night sky again. Samuel was back at Eli's side. "What is it, son?" Eli questioned. "You called for me again?" said the boy with growing perplexity. "No, I didn't," said the priest. "If you are called a third time, ask Adonai to speak directly to you." Now he stood outside the boy Samuel's room and strained his ears. There it was again, thunder in the mountains, rolling down the hills and valleys until it boomed in the courtyard. The old man grew curious and crept to the door of the lad's room. It had been many years since the voice had been heard in Shiloh. It had been so long Eli could hardly recollect how it had sounded. But there it was tonight, rolling thunder, but clearly not for him. When he heard young Samuel's voice answer in reply, he felt like an intruder, and so he returned to his chambers and laid down. Sleep was not to come, however. The old priest finally pushed away his blankets and went to his desk, lit a lamp, and began to write. "The old temple has been deprived of life for many years. I can recall when I first came to worship on this mountain in Shiloh. I was just a boy. My father, known to all as a judge in Samaria, told me many times of this place. As a young man, he had watched as the priests brought the sacred golden ark into the holy place here in this very temple. It had been preserved throughout our people's desert wanderings, cared for by Joshua himself, and delivered here to this place with great ceremony. In those days, the voice was heard clearly and often. But that is not today, not now. We were a proud people back then, Yahweh's chosen ones. We had escaped Pharaoh's mighty army, leaving them at the bottom of the sea. We had been sustained by heaven in our hunger. During those years in the wilderness, we ate the food of the angels. Breakfast every day with those beautiful beings encamped all around us. We sang songs of Moses in our tents by night. I can almost hear the harmonies coming back to us in a sublime echo off the mountains. On some nights, we heard the angels singing with us, and it was too beautiful for words to describe. It was a time when anything was possible. We were carried by a promise of a homeland ahead. The night we took Jericho was a story for the ages. That very morning, the angel of the Lord had gone before us, and following him, we felt that there was such strength in our numbers. We could have torn the Jericho wall down by our bare hands, but it was the roar of our voices that it fell down completely in miracle fashion. We took the city without casualties. Those were the strategic and extraordinary times, and Eli rehearsed them over and over in his mind. He trimmed the oil lamp and returned to his writing. I taught these things to my own sons in my younger years. They are grown men now, and though they serve in this temple, they care not for Yahweh and his ways with men. They are greedy and proud, and I am too old to muster the strength to oppose them. This is their temple now, but the voice has been silent for many years until tonight. It has been heard this night by the boy, Samuel. I recall the first time I met his mother. Hannah was her name, a strong and determined woman, but with sadness in her eyes. Her tears fell that day as she knelt in this temple. I had heard the other women talk of her. They were her foes. They could be no doubt. A lowlife, they called her. A friend to the poor and destitute. But under a curse herself. Barren. She could not conceive a child. I myself had thought her to be drunk. She carried on so. I told her to put the bottle away. She had assured me that she had not been drinking. Just terribly sad. I dismissed her with the standard pious blessing of a priest, and she was gone. But exactly 1 year later, she returned with a baby in her arms. She hung on me and kissed my feet. She thanked me for interceding for her and told me that her prayers had been answered with the birth of her son. I secretly knew I had not done a thing on her behalf. I had forgotten her as soon as she left the temple that first day. But she left the boy with me. She consecrated him to serve in the temple all of his days, and tonight the voice called his name. Eli, it was Samuel calling for him, come in, child, you may as well. This night is not for sleeping. Then, with an earnest tone, Eli leaned toward the lad and asked, what did the voice say to you? Tell me quickly, for I must know. I would find it difficult to say to you, Samuel said with his eyes cast down. But you must say it, lad. Eli put down his pen and looked at Samuel's face with a deep intensity. He is not pleased. Yahweh is unhappy with the goings-on in this temple. Samuel continued, he will bring an end to your family's involvement with the priestly duties and to your lives as well. It is a hard saying, Samuel cried. He will do as he sees fit, the old priest sighed. Return to your bed, child, Eli said. I must be alone now. The light from the oil lamp fell again across the scroll. The hour was late, yet he could hear the noise from the hallway as his two sons returned home. They had obviously been drinking. Eli, annoyed and fearful, returned to his writing. Hophni and Phinehas, my sons, they care not at all for the sacred things. They pursue the women of Israel, but not the God of Israel. My warnings reach their ears, but not their hearts. Now I fear for their lives. Yahweh has determined that their time is short. Yet they carry on as if they own forever. Alas, I am crushed in spirit, and I have failed as a father and as a priest. The blessing is on Samuel now. I am finished. The old priest laid awake in his bed until the light of morning filled his windows. He walked down the dimly lit hallway, bumping into a stranger, a young woman, coming out the door. "Phineas?" she giggled. "Oh, sorry, sir." She disappeared down the hallway, calling for Phineas as she ran. Elish shook his gray head. "This is not good," he muttered. "Not good at all." The news was not good outside the temple as well. The Philistines were, again, on the move and headed for the West Bank. They had sent a messenger ahead to Shiloh, announcing the soon overthrow of Israel. They were coming fast, and they intended to shed blood. "We need every available man to get his weapons and prepare to defend the homeland." The decree went out throughout all of Palestine. Eli joined Hophni and Phinehas in the recruiting line, but a caustic general refused even to talk to the old man. "Go home," he barked in Eli's face. The Philistines were fearsome in appearance and in battle. Originally from the land of Sicily, they were equally at home on land or sea. After settling in northern Africa, they befriended a race of giants, the Nephilim, a fantastic number of huge warrior kings who roamed the earth as they pleased. They were paid handsomely by the Philistines as mercenaries. But over the years, they settled into their camp as allies. Now they march against Israel, said Eli to no one. He stared out the window and wondered how long they had. Then he had an idea. He called for a contingent of Levites and instructed them to carry the sacred ark to the battle lines. He figured that the power of that historical relic would stand against even a race of giants. "It's our only hope," he explained to the nervous man before him. The ark also had never been moved since it came to Shiloh. But on this day, it was paraded before the troops of Israel. And a spontaneous roar rose from the ranks. Seizing the moment, Eli addressed the men who were heading out to meet the Philistine army. "Go in Yahweh's might." He saw his sons Hophni and Phinehas in the ranks, and for a moment he felt proud of them. Today they were soldiers in the Lord's army, the side of righteousness, ready to enter battle against a fierce and evil foe. Tall and straight they stood in the morning sunlight. Eli was lost in his own thoughts as the troops assembled in marching ranks and headed for the encounter with the enemy. He wondered if he would ever see them alive again, or if perhaps the Lord would show mercy. He worried about the ark being carried into battle at the front of the marching brigades. 2 days later, the Israeli army came upon the Philistine war machine. The fierceness of these conquerors shocked even the veterans of battle. Led by an immense giant and followed by a dozen or so others, the invaders began to make quick work of the Hebrews. One of the Nephilim, who had six fingers on each hand, cut the head off an Israeli general. He flung it toward the Jewish troops with amazing power, causing the defending nation to retreat in terror. They saw their supply wagons being set ablaze with torches, and as the invaders came to the cart carrying the Ark of the Covenant, they watched in horror as two giant men wheeled the sacred object back to their own holy place in the mountainside. Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, called for any brave men to join them, and they made a run at the ark with about 50 warriors, determined to save it from capture. Although they had been selfish and disobedient as priests, as soldiers they were Jews above all else, and their courage carried them across the open plain and straight for the ark. They were met with an unbelievable onslaught from the flank as the legion of Philistines intercepted them just before they reached the golden ark with the help of several Nephilim. They tore through the Israelites, hacking and stabbing with long spears and hefty swords. Not one Hebrew was left standing. Hophni and Phinehas were placed on a pile of bodies, Logs were pushed on top of them, and a fire was set to the mass of dead men. The ark was gone. It was now in enemy hands. Israel had been sorely beaten, and there were few survivors. Back at Shiloh, Eli sat at his desk awaiting news from the front. He jumped at the sound of every set of footsteps outside on the road from the western region. Most were peddlers or farmers coming to town, but then toward evening, as the lamps were lit, came the pounding sound of a runner's steps. "News! I bring news!" he called as he approached the village. "Tell of it, man," said Eli, coming out to meet him in the square. "Total annihilation," gasped the runner. For a moment, the gathering crowd felt hope that it was good news the messenger brought from the battle. Sensing their rising expectations, the man shook his head. "We have been crushed by the powerful hand of the Philistines," he shouted. "There are few survivors from our troops." He then began to read a rolled scroll of about 125 names, signatures of men who had survived the battle and who were physically capable of signing their names. Eli listened, hoping against hope that his sons' names would be called. But as the herald rolled the scroll and stowed it in his satchel, Eli realized that Hophni and Phinehas were gone. Eli stumbled back to his desk and sat down. Young Samuel, who had stayed and heard the entire report, came to Eli's room and cleared his throat. "Your boys died in noble fashion," the attendant said. Eli turned to face the young man. "Tell me," whispered the old priest. Samuel shared the report from the battlefield, how Hophni and Phinehas had rallied 50 or so men to a do-or-die mission to save the captured ark. He told of their selfless valor, and how they had fought like wild men with unparalleled bravery. "Their finest hour," said Eli. "And the ark, is it gone?" Samuel nodded. "In Dagon's temple in Philistine territory," the boy said sadly. Eli closed his eyes. He could never have explained what he was feeling. Though his body was falling backwards to the floor, he felt as light as air. It was as though he was leaving the earth behind, and with it, its sorrows and heartaches. "Shadows. It was all just shadows," the watchful Samuel heard Eli whisper. "I see the true temple of God before me now. What's this? Am I a boy again? I am glad beyond measure, for I am going to the house of the Lord." The old priest fell backward and was gone. In fact, he had already left the world behind. He had heard the voice calling, and this time it called for him. As Samuel listened to the old priest's final breath, Yahweh's chosen ones were the last words to escape his lips. Outside the temple, the thunder was heard again.
This has been Soul Chaser. We hope this program has caused you to consider the vastness of God's love for you. Nothing is going to change that reality, but love can certainly change you. Remember, love is everywhere, and God is love. For more stories with a purpose, pick up a copy of Soul Chaser, Devotions to Anchor the Soul, available on our website, soulchaserbook.com, or find it at amazon.com. This is Jordan Rich for Lauren Decker and Soul Chaser. See you next time.